All right, good morning, everybody. It is 10:20 on Thursday, July 16th. And we are doing Chem 3 lecture. We got through a lot of content yesterday. And I think we kind of ended on a good note. We ended exactly where we need to go. So far what we've done is we've looked at acid base. And we looked at redox, and we really did as much redox yesterday as I really want to do. There's not a whole lot more to redox. Redox is a fairly narrow sort of subject matter that we look at in Chem 3, at least in this part. As we look at chapter six goes from chemical reactions and balancing chemical reactions reactions to reaction types and in the reaction types we are covering acid base, double displacement, we covered a good bit of combustion and redox. And then after you get through those different reaction types and looking at those types of reactions, the next thing that we go to is reaction stoichiometry. And so that's where we're going to go today. And within reaction stoichiometry, there are three different main types. Three main types of problems that we need to cover. Those types are just standard stoichiometry, grams to grams, mass to mass. A type that's called limiting reagent. And then what we have is percent yields as well. And so that's what we're going to try to cover today. Oh, is it actually chapter 7? Am I really? Yeah, it is chapter 7. I think you're right.
I have a really quick side note question about the salt or the little 10 reactions worksheet thing that let's do today.
Okay.
So we're supposed to pick 10 of them. One of mine is the one that we did as an example in class. Is that okay? Or do you want me to do a new one that we haven't done?
No, that's fine. Go ahead and make it.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Yeah. So Marisol is correct. This was actually chapter 7 and I was off by chapter. And yet all the information is correct that I put in here. It's just the three main types of problems that we're going to look at today. So this is what we're going to try to do today is we're going to try to make it through this part. Beyond the reaction stoichiometry, there is a little section in chapter 7 that actually has some good problem types that go back to the acid base. And we might hit those too. They're called quantitative chemical analysis. And they have below that quantitative chemical analysis. And I'll have to decide whether or not we're going to skip this for now. I might come back and hit this in the acid base because what they have is in here, they have titrations, but they should have it also in acid base. And we want to do more of an extensive acid base chapter next week. So we may hold on that. And they have gravimetric, which is weight, using mass in order to be able to identify things. And I think that we may hold on that gravimetric too, that we've already sort of done that a little bit in lab. So I think that we will skip this part for now. And we'll come back and we'll hit this piece specifically because titration is very important. and it is a skill set that we want you to get out of this class. But I think that we'll hit it in the acid base chapter later when we get, as we start jumping around a little bit. There we go. Where is acid base? Acid base equilibria. It comes in chapter 14. And we are going to skip and just pick a few chapters of the last few chapters left. But chapter 14 in acid base is something that's going to be important. So we will get to that. Okay. Let's look at stoichiometry and look at these mass-to-mass limiting reagent and percent yield calculations and what we've got to do with that. And what I want to do, and I should have grabbed this ahead of time, and I didn't. I apologize, but I'm going to go fish for it now. That I think I had done a... sheet that was on stoichiometry and roadmaps. There it is. And I want to grab this. And we'll add solutions into this. So in terms of roadmaps, this is sort of our overview of stoichiometry. And I'm going to include in there to date because there's more that goes into stoichiometry. And what is missing out of this stoichiometry overview is solutions. And now that we've covered concentrations and solutions, we should put solutions into this. So we'll put down here solutions. And if I have solution A and a volume that is in liters of solution A, that through the concentration, I can go into moles of A through concentration. And that concentration is in moles per liter. And the same thing, I can come back out of moles of B into liters of solution B through its concentration in moles per liter. But there were also other units of concentration. And so there's other ways to be able to get into this. For instance, I could get into this through parts per million or parts per billion or other units of concentration can allow me to be able to go in and out of the mole bridge. And so these could also come from other volume units. So we're extending out that roadmap. And what that roadmap actually looks like. And that's now everything that we've had to date. And so what we're going to be doing in the equation stoichiometry is that so far what we have done is we have taken grams of material and looked at moles of A and moles of B and grams of B, but they have all been within a formula. So far what we have done, our stoichiometry has been limited to looking at just a single compound. For instance, if I have C12H22O11, I can, and I have 32 grams of this, I can calculate the number of grams of just carbon or oxygen or whatever by using these subscripts in order to be able to develop a relationship that says for every one mole of C12, H22O11, it equals 12 moles of carbon. And these are molar relationships. And so the subscripts were thought of as molar relationships. Well, one of the things that I can do that we haven't done yet is to take a chemical equation. And when we look at a chemical equation that is balanced, and it must be balanced. A balanced chemical equation, when I look at it, let's pick one, and maybe we will, let's balance it out real quick. Let's take octane C8H18 plus O2 goes to form CO2 and H2O. And to balance this out, I need 25 This is going to be 16 and 2 times 18, and I need, that's 18. That's all I need, because it's 2 times 18. So this is the balanced chemical equation. In a balanced chemical equation, these coefficients are molar coefficients. And they can be used as molar ratios to do stoichiometry. So that I can say that for every 2 moles, why does it keep coming out green? Stop it, black. For every 2 moles of C8H18, it equals 25 moles of O2, or for every 25 moles of O2, it equals 16 moles of CO2. Or I could say for every 2 moles of C8H18, it equals 16 moles of CO2. That I can go any direction and between any two of the molar coefficients, and I can develop molar ratios. Kai, did I just do that in my head? Yes, I did do that in my head. I'm sorry. And yeah, sorry. Don't be too impressed. I have balanced that equation many, many times, and I can look at it and I can see kind of what I need to do, that I know that I need 8 of the carbons. And so it's 8 in front of the CO2. And I know that I need 18 hydrogens, so it's 9 in front of the H2O. And I know that I was going to come out with 25 oxygens that I was going to need. And so to get the 25, it's 25 halves, and then I have to multiply the whole thing by 2. And I just, yes, I sort of did it in my head. But I've been balancing them for 20 years. So, yes, it's disgusting. I know. I apologize. All right, so these molar coefficients. The molar coefficients allow us to be able to then go through and do stoichiometry calculations, not within a formula anymore, not within a single molecule, but now we can do any sort of calculation that we want. And we can talk about how much of a product we can make, or how much of a reactant we need, or how much of a reactant we need to react with one reactant. There's all sorts of permutations now that we can do within these types of calculations. And that's what the stoichiometry allows us to be able to do. So the roadmap never said, hey, this is only for a molecule and you can only go within a molecule and go through this roadmap. Not true. This roadmap, this entire roadmap is not only applicable to within a molecule, but applicable to within an equation where I have whole number coefficients. And that opens the door to all sorts of calculations at this point. So now we can do all kinds of things and ask all sorts of questions. So now it's just, let's just show some permutations and show what we can do here. And I have a particular way and style that I like to approach these problems with. It always starts with a balanced chemical equation. After you have the balanced chemical equation, sometimes the equation is given to you unbalanced and you need to balance it, or you need to check and make sure that it is balanced. Then we use the balanced chemical equation to help parse the problem. So let's write out a problem and let's show how we might be able to use this. Let's use the octane equation that I just had. And we will say that in this problem, so this is an example, the balanced chemical equation for the combustion of octane is given. It is 2C8H18, this is a liquid, plus 2502 gas goes to make 16CO2 gas plus an additional 18 water, which is a liquid. If, let's say, a pound is 453.6. Let's go with 2 pounds. And so we're at roughly 1,000 grams. Let's say that if 1,000, and we'll give it one decimal there, so that means 4 sig figs, 1,000 grams of octane, of C8H18, were combusted with excess oxygen, how many grams of carbon dioxide would be produced? Okay. So I approach the problem in exactly the same way that I've approached any other stoichiometry problem, except for one thing. I have a balanced chemical equation. And because of that, I'm going to use the balanced chemical equation to help build my roadmap and parse the problem. Otherwise, everything else I'm going to do is exactly the same. My given, I have 1,000 grams of octane. And my question, my desired, how many grams of CO2? So there's my desired. And it's given me another piece here. It says excess oxygen. And I want to talk about what that phrase means and why we have excess oxygen. So let's parse it onto the problem. By doing that, I have 1,000 grams of C8H18. I want to know how many grams of CO2 I make. And I have excess of my O2. So my excess, my given, and my desired. And now I've reduced the problem to something that is visually a little bit easier to see. And roadmap-wise, I'm going to go from grams of this to moles of C8H18. I will then go to moles of CO2, and then I will go to grams of CO2. And that's my roadmap. And why do I need to know that I have excess CO2? Well, this goes back to sort of the bicycle problem that we had talked about, that if I have, let's say that these are my frames, that the octane is my frames, and the oxygen is my tires. And let's say that I have 100 frames, and I have 400 tires, then the number of bicycles that I could make that are completed bicycles would be 100 bicycles, plus I will have some tires left over. I will have used 200. I'll have 200 tires left over. And what that means is that this guy runs out first. In other words, this is limiting to how many I can actually produce. And this one is not limiting. It just means that I have extra, more than I need, so that I don't have to worry about it. That's what excess means. So the excess is just telling me that that thing is not limiting and don't worry about it. That's essentially what that's saying. Okay. So now roadmap wise, I have written the roadmap out here in the problem, but I like to write my roadmaps out a little more linearly. I just like to parse this problem to think about sort of where it is that I'm going. But if I'm going to write the roadmap, the actual roadmap, and we can correlate it with our other big roadmap too. So maybe I should do that. Maybe I should grab that roadmap, bring it down, and let's actually use it and show where we're starting and where we're going. Because we've done this plenty of times. And a skill set that might be a really good skill set is to take this roadmap, get a plastic binder page, print this out, put it in the plastic binder page, and then use an erasable marker on top of it so that you can make marks on top of it, follow out your diagram, make your roadmap until you get used to doing it more in your head. And that way you have something that you can just use over and over and over again. All right, where are we starting? We're starting here in grams of A. We're starting at this point. And what are we being asked for? We're being asked for grams of B. The roadmap that we are going to follow is going to take us through to moles of A, to moles of B, to grams of B. And the roadmap that we're going to follow is going to be just that much right there. It's just that A and B now are not within a molecule, they're within a formula. But the process is absolutely no different. I think that's the thing that I can highlight out the most, that the process is absolutely no different. So roadmap wise, I'm going to go from grams of C8H18, and I will go to moles of C8H18. I will go through the stoichiometry of the molar coefficients to the moles of CO2, and then I will go to the grams of CO2. And that's the roadmap that I'm going to follow. Notice that I'm going to need some pieces of information to complete this, but those pieces of information I already know how to calculate. This piece is the molar mass of C8H18. These are the molar coefficients. And this is the molar mass of CO2. And so I will have to go through and calculate some of these molar masses. And I will have to get the molar coefficients from the balanced chemical equation. But those are the steps that I need to solve it. So let's get those pieces. So we'll assemble the pieces that we need to solve the problem required. Molar mass, C8H18. Molar mass, CO2, and molar coefficients, which we could read was 2 moles C8H18 equaled, 16? 16 moles CO2. Okay, so we've got that. We got to calculate out this piece and this piece. This is 8 times 12.01 for carbon, plus an additional 18 times 1.008 for hydrogen. Oh, we could do it this way too, so you guys can watch me. 8 times 12.01 plus 18 times 1.008. So this is 114.224 grams per mole. I should probably round that out to the right number of sig figs. 8 times 12.01 is going to be in the tenths position. And so I would round this out, no, hundredths position. So I would round this out to there. It's 114.22 grams per mole. And I always like to keep the unit with it too of the thing that it is, C8H18. Let's do CO2 now. CO2 is going to be 12.01 plus 2 times 16.00. That seems like it has the right number of sig figs in it, grams per mole of CO2. Now I've got everything I need. I've got my molar masses. They're a little tight, I apologize. And I've got my equality for the molar coefficients. Now I can actually start writing out this problem. So from there, we will use those pieces of information and we will follow our roadmap. Let's get that roadmap so that we can actually see how we progress with this. My initial value was 1,000 grams with a decimal of C8H18. So this was 4 sig figs, and that is because of the decimal place. We're going to multiply and first convert this into a number of moles. And we found that it was 144.22 grams per mole. 144.22 grams for every 1 mole of C8H18. Now I'm in moles. From the moles, need to tighten it up just a little bit.
Where did the 144.22 come from?
We calculated that right here in our molar mass of C8H18.
Is it 114?
Oh, you're right. Thank you. Perfect. Thanks for keeping me honest. Okay, from here, we go through the molar coefficients, and the molar coefficients were 2 moles of C8H18 to 16 moles CO2. And that value could be reduced down, but I'm going to use it as is. There's no sense in reducing it down. 2 moles, C8H18. For every 16 moles CO2. And we'll go back to the chemical equation because I want to verify that and make sure that that's right. And I want you to see it. 2 to 16. So that is correct. And then we'll convert the moles of CO2 into grams of CO2. So for every 1 mole of CO2, it is 44.01 grams. And I have followed my roadmap. Unit wise, grams of C8H18 are canceling. Moles of C8H18 are canceling. Moles of CO2 are canceling. And I'm left with one unit of measure, and it is in the numerator. We'll get the value, and then we'll follow through on the sig figs. So this is going to be 1,000 divided by 114.22 times 16 divided by 2 times 44.01. Notice that I got rid of the sound. So there's no more dinging when my calculator goes. I figured out how to make that all work. 3082.4724, let it run out, we can see. And this is in grams of CO2. And we said, I'm just gonna go back and just check my calculation. I've got 1,000 in there, divided by 114.22. times 16 divided by 2 times 44. Yep, all looks good. And sig fig wise, it was 4, 5, exact, because these are counted. These ratios are exact whole number counted ratios. And 4 sig figs for the molar mass there. It looks like my smallest is 4. And so I rounded out, and this is 3082 grams of CO2 produced. So think about that. For every 1,000 grams of octane burned, I get 3,000 grams of CO2. It's actually kind of a cool problem. Octane is actually gasoline. Gasoline is mostly octane. When you burn octane, the amount of mass of octane, you get 3 times that amount of mass in CO2. So however much gas you put into your gas tank, you produce 3 times that amount of mass in terms of CO2 every time you burn gasoline. It's just the process of combustion. And it's the fact that I'm trading. So for every one of these carbons, every one of these carbons makes a single CO2. And I am trading hydrogens, which weigh 1 gram per mole, for 2 oxygens that weigh 16 grams per mole. So I'm basically taking every carbon and adding 32 grams per mole to it, which is why it produces so much more mass CO2. And it's kind of a cool problem in thinking that, in working through that. And it shows how we can go through and how we can do the stoichiometry. And we don't have to do it reactant to product. It can be reactant to reactant. So we could do another problem. Another example might be based on another problem. Let's see, I don't want to do all combustion problems. I want to do something else. Let's say that we are doing a reaction that is called a hydrogenation reaction. And what we are doing is we are taking ethylene . This shows some nice different ways of representing things too. Plus hydrogen gas. And there's a catalyst that helps us to do this job. And we make ethane. So this could be written C2H4 plus H2 goes to form C2H6, a combination reaction where the molar coefficients are all one. So I've done it both in Lewis structures, and we've done it sort of in a more chemical formula way. If 3.72 grams of ethylene, which is my C2H4, is to be converted into ethane. That is the C2H6. How many grams of H2 hydrogen are required? So this problem, we can parse it the same way using the balanced chemical equation, C2H4. Plus H2 goes to make C2H6. And we just bring down and say, all right, we've got 3.72 grams of the C2H4, and we want to know how many grams of hydrogen. And so we're going to go to the moles of C2H4, to the moles of hydrogen, and back to the grams. And that's going to be our roadmap. So the roadmap that we would write out, if we were writing the whole thing out, would be grams C2H4 to moles C2H4 to moles of hydrogen, H2, be careful that you need to write it H2, to the grams of H2. Why do I need to be careful about writing it as H2? Because when I do the molar mass, it's going to be the molar mass of H2, not the molar mass of just hydrogen. Okay, so I need the molar mass of C2H4, and I need the molar mass of hydrogen. And we'll get those really quickly here. Molar mass C2H4, 2 times 12.01 plus 4 times 1.008. So this is 28.05 grams per mole. And for hydrogen, 2 times 1.008 is going to be the 2.016. So for H2, it equals 2.016 grams per mole. And now I have each of the molar masses that I need. And my balanced chemical equation was a 1-to-1. I've got everything I need to be able to do this problem, and I can run it out pretty quick. 3.72 grams. Keep it so that the roadmap's in view. 3.72 grams C2H4 times, for every 28.05 grams of C2H4, it's one mole. For every 1 mole of C2H4, I require 1 mole of hydrogen. For every 1 mole of hydrogen, It is 2.016 grams of hydrogen. And I've written out the problem. So this is going to be 3.72 divided by 28.05 times 1 divided by 1, I'll skip those, times 2.016. So that is going to be equal to 0.26736265668. Just truncate it there. This is in terms of grams of hydrogen. And sig figs wise, I had 3, 4 exact, 4. My smallest is 3. So this equals 0.267 grams per mole. Oops, not grams per mole, just grams. And that is grams of hydrogen required. The word required doesn't need to be in there. I'm just trying to relate it back to the problem. So how does that look? Skill set wise, are we understanding what we can do now with the chemical equation and the way that we can interconvert back and forth? Good. Okay, and so in a balanced chemical equation, the key thing here is that in a balanced chemical equation, I need a good equation, there we go. We can go any direction. We can go to reactant to reactant. We can go reactant to either product. We can go to a product back to a reactant. We can work backwards. If we want to make a certain amount of something, we can work backwards from that product to figure out how much starting material we need to use in order to make that. So all of those relationships are all valid relationships, and you can go any direction. And this general roadmap still holds for all of those relationships. Okay. Let me take a look. And I wanted to see if there was anything else that I need to hit here. They have their roadmap online. Mine's a whole lot prettier. But that hits everything that's in the stoichiometry component. And then from there, they go into reaction yields and starting to talk about reaction yields and limiting reagents. And a limiting reagent problem is an interesting problem. Let's see what we've got. So we've explained limiting reagent problems. We've explained the concept. I think it's worth it to just hit it one more time. In a limiting reagent problem, you're generally given two pieces. Two reactants and a balanced chemical equation that tells you how to put the thing together. And we give you the two reagents and we tell you how much of each thing you have. And you are asked to identify how much you can actually make. So if we had, again, just is an easy way, 10 frames. And we had 15 tires, and it takes 2 tires for each frame. In order to make all of the bikes, in order to use all of the frames, I would need 20 tires, and I don't have 20 tires. I have 15 tires. I have an odd number of tires, in fact. And so the number of bikes that I could make a number of bikes from the frames, So if I thought from the frames, and I did sort of like a little diagram here, from the frames themselves, since there are 10 frames, and the ratio is one frame to one bike, that means that I can make 10 bikes. And given that I have 15 tires, and it is two tires to every one bike, the number of bikes that I can make would be 7, and I would have one tire left over. But that's how many bikes I would be able to make if I was thinking about these in whole number ratios in the way it works together. This number is the smaller number. And because this is the smaller number, it is the number of bikes that can actually be made. And what we say is that the tires are limiting. And so what would happen out of this equation, if I were to actually run this equation, I would be able to make 7 bikes, plus I would have some frames left over. I would have 3 frames, plus I'd have an extra tire. And so the answer in how many bikes I could make would be 7 bikes. Now, this limiting reagent problem is kind of intuitive because we're looking at it and we understand intuitively how this thing goes together. And mentally, we can figure out how many frames are left over and how many tires are left over, and all that is tangible. When it goes to molecules, that tangible goes out the window and gets a lot harder. But it's not any harder. It's not a different problem. It is the exact same problem. So what did we do here? What was the key to solving this problem? And the problem really was, how many bikes can I make and what is limiting? I want to move this down a little bit because I want to look at what we actually did here. The problem would have been stated, how many bikes can we make? And perhaps, what is limiting? And the process that we went through was a process of running two different stoichiometries. We set up two stoichiometries. And we look for the smallest. Of products. So that's the process that we actually did. Asking the question, how many bikes can we make given both starting materials, the amounts of both starting materials, we set up two stoichiometry calculations and we look for the smallest number of products. So we take the frames and we run them out to the bikes. We take the tires, we run them out to the bikes. We find the smallest number of bikes. That means that that reagent was the limiting reagent. And so we were able then to identify the limiting reagent based on the smallest number of bikes that could be created. It is the exact same problem. If you keep that in mind, when we go through and we do a limiting reagent problem like this, we're going to see that it's exactly the same thing. You guys are awfully quiet today. That means I'm either doing my job and I'm explaining it such that there's no questions.
This makes sense.
Okay, that's cool. That's good. So everybody's with me. Yeah, as long as I'm on bikes, everybody's good. Switch to chemicals and it's like everything's going to go out the window. No, you guys are going to be fine. We're going to be great. All right, let's try a limiting reagent problem. Let's see what we can do with it. Okay, so let's grab a balanced chemical equation. And what do I want to make today? Let's make, I'm going to do this in formula for a second because I can't do it in my head. I'm too tired to think about it. But this is the formula that I want to use, and I'm going to reduce it down to a reaction in a second that we can use. Okay, so this is C6H4 5 6 O3 plus C4 H6 O3 goes to form C6789 H3 4 5 6 7 8 O4. This is salicylic acid. A molecule that is called acetic anhydride. And another molecule that is called acetylsalicylic acid. And they go together in a one-to-one ratio. And while you don't know this reaction or know what acetylsalicylic acid is, it's incredibly important. This is aspirin. And so this is how aspirin is made from salicylic acid, which is actually isolated out of the bark of the willow tree. And salicylic acid was used to treat inflammation and pain and fever in antiquity. The Romans knew how to use it. The Greeks knew how to use it. The Egyptians knew how to use it. It has been known for a very, very long time that if you took willow bark and made a tea from it, that that tea would reduce fever, inflammation, and pain. And the Bayer Company found a way to take salicylic acid and to manufacture what is called acetylsalicylic acid, which we now call aspirin, that works even better than salicylic acid did. So salicylic acid, the problem with it was that it was very stringent and caused stomach upset and stomach ulcers and stomach bleeding. So you could only take it in sort of like a tea form. You couldn't actually ingest it as a pure material. It was too toxic to the stomach to be able to do that. But aspirin, with this group on it in place of the hydroxyl group down here, makes it less acidic and your stomach tolerates it and it has all the same added health benefits. So this is the formation of acetylsalicylic acid or aspirin. And if we start with an amount that is, let's say 1.02 grams of this, and we start off with another, 1.72 grams. How many grams of this material can I make? And this is a limiting reagent problem. And it would be stated this way. It would be stated if 1.02 grams of salicylic acid are combined with 1.72 grams of acetic anhydride, how many grams of aspirin can be formed? So there's our limiting reaction problem. And what we've done is we've been given two givens. We have the grams of acetylsalicylic acid, and I'll use a darker blue color because there's two givens. So a slightly darker blue color of the acetic anhydride. So these are our two givens. And we have one desired, and that desired is grams of aspirin. So that's where we're going. And basically what we do is we perform two stoichiometries. So the two stoichiometries, we will go from C7H6O3 plus C4H6O3 goes to C9H8O4. We will go from here to here in terms of grams, and we'll do the same for that one, and then we'll see which one is smaller. And it is exactly like the bicycle problem, except that where in the bicycle problem, we were given the actual, you can think of like the tires and the frames as the moles. In the bicycle problem, we were given moles, but in this case, we're given grams, and we will have to go from grams to moles in order to be able to use the stoichiometry. Okay, so how do we write all that out? And what are we going to need to do it? Let's look at our roadmaps for each one of these problems. The roadmaps are going to look like this. We'll have two. For the salicylic acid, we will go from grams, C7, H6O3 to moles, C7H6O3 to moles, C9H8O4, and then finally out to the grams of C9H8O4. For the acetic anhydride, we will go from the grams of C4H6O3 to the moles, C4H6O3 to the moles of C9H8O4 and to the grams, C9H8O4. We'll look and see which one of those is the smallest. Then we do it. And in order to do that, notice that we need the molar mass of salicylic acid. We need the molar mass of acetic anhydride. And for this part over here, we'll need the molar mass of the aspirin itself. And then the molar ratios are 1:1. So it's not quite so bad. You guys all following in terms of how we've parsed this problem out and where this problem came from? Okay, so I think maybe we ought to just try and do this real quick and then take a break and then we'll come back and we'll look at something else. So let's finish this out. Let's get the molar masses that we need. Acetic anhydride. Nope. Salicylic acid, C7H6O3. C7H6O3. That's 7 times mass of carbon plus 6 times the mass of hydrogen plus 3 times the mass of oxygen. Notice that each time I do this, I write it in a slightly more truncated way, just kind of trying to show you how I go through and do this when I'm working on my own. This is 138.12 grams per mole. Usually I round them off to the hundreds position. If I went through and did the sig figs, these guys would almost all round to the hundreds position. And that's why I tend to do that. And so I'm rounding it off, even though this is showing me 138.118, I'm rounding it to 138.12, always sort of the hundreds position. For the C4H6O3, this was the acetic anhydride. This was the salicylic acid. We'll do the aspirin in a minute. 4 times 12.01 plus 6 times 1.008 plus 3 times 16. And I always look over my calculation to make sure that it's looking about right. And this does. It's 102.09. Let's get the last one. Aspirin. That was C9H8O4. And it shows it does take more work in these. 9 times 12.01 plus 8 times 1.008 plus now 4 times 16. And it is 16.00 on the periodic table. I just know it in my head that it's 0.00, and I know that I'm going to account for it in the sig figs. But that's because I'm getting more used to doing these. And that's not the skill set that I'm testing right now. I'm really testing the rest of the skill set of how do I go through and do this type of limiting reagent problem. So this is 180.15 grams per mole. Okay, I got all the molar masses. Now it's a matter of going through and running the two stoichiometries. So we can take our roadmaps and follow each one of the roadmaps. So this would be number one. And, I need the number of grams I started with. 1.02 grams. 1.02 grams, C7H6O3. Its molar mass was 138.12. 138.12 grams, C7H6O3, for every 1 mole. For every 1 mole of C7H6O3, I get 1 mole of C9H8O4. That came from the balanced chemical equation where the coefficients were 1 to one to one. So this is a one to one to one relationship. For every one mole of C9H8O4, I get 180.15 grams per mole. And we'll get that value. So that is 1.02 divided by 138.12 times 180.15. This is 1.3303866. I'll come back and get it. Grams of, I think I made a mistake here too. That was just supposed to be grams of C9H8O4. We'll run the other stoichiometry and we'll see what it comes out to. I'm not even gonna do my sig figs until the very end because it doesn't make sense to waste time on it just yet when we don't know which one is limiting. In this one, this is our second roadmap, starting from the acetic anhydride. So we'll take that roadmap and put it there. And for that one, we had 1.72 grams of acetic anhydride. So we're starting with 1.72 grams C4H6O3. And we start off down the stoichiometry road. Its molar mass is 102.09 grams C4H6O3 for every one mole. Stoichiometry to the product is 1:1. C9H8O4. And then for every one mole of C9H8O4, we get 180 0.15 grams, C9H8O4. And we'll get that mass. 1.72 divided by 102.09 times 180.15. That's 3.03514549, whatever. I'm going to make that a 6 and just cut it at that. And that's grams of C9H8O4. Okay, so I've done the two. Now I look for which one is smaller and which one is limiting. The one that is smaller is this one. And that means that this guy is limiting. And the actual amount that I could make would be based on the sig figs. This was 3, 5, exact, 5. So 3 is my smallest. The actual answer to the problem would be written that 1.02 grams C7H6O3 is limiting. And produces 1.33 grams of C9H8O4. And that is my final answer. it's a little bit more involved than the bikes. But it's the exact same thing as the bikes. You're doing the same process, and you have to keep that in your mind that that's the process you're doing. Does that make sense? At least in terms of equating it to the bicycles and what you're trying to do. And it is, this is a long problem. Look at what we did. And let me ask you this. Think about coming into this class 4 weeks ago. You never imagined you'd be doing something like this and how mathematical this is and how much work actually needed to be done to be able to go through and do this problem. But conceptually, we're there. You're there. You have the ability to do these types of problems, which is really pretty cool. And we could do these types of comparisons.
I have a question, sir.
Yes.
So the actual problem itself made sense to me, but the drawings that you did of the chemicals at the top didn't.
And they weren't, because you've never seen drawings like that. The drawings that I did like that are what are called bond line formulas. They're used in organic chemistry to communicate structures very quickly. In a bond line formula, what we do is, for instance, if I were to take a molecule that is propanol or isopropanol, and this is its Lewis structure, organic chemists don't like to write this much. It takes a long time to write this out. And so what an organic chemist does is says, these two things are the same thing. What I do is I take an every carbon, every time I go from carbon to carbon, I bend it and make an angle. And the carbons then are at the ends and at the joining of the lines. The oxygen and the hydrogen that is attached to the oxygen must be shown explicitly. All the other hydrogens are implied in the structure. So it allows me to take something that looks like this, that would be the beginning salicylic acid. And this has double bonds between the carbons in its Lewis structure. And it has this big, long, drawn out structure of having to write out all the carbons and all the hydrogens. And instead, I turn it into this, which is Go ahead.
Will we be using these this semester in this class?
No, Ayla, you will not. You can just ignore that. But what I needed to do is I couldn't count this in my head and get it right. And I wanted to get the formulas and I wanted to do that problem just because it just seemed like I'm an organic chemist and I think in organic molecules and inorganic small things are not always on the tip of my tongue. And yet these organic molecules are, so it was an easy place to go to. But I wanted to make sure that I had the formulas right because I don't think in formulas, I think in pictures. It's just the way my brain works. And so it was a way for me to communicate very quickly what the structure was and then be able to get out that structure. You don't learn that until you get into organic chemistry. So don't worry about those structures. It's the concept that I was trying to get across and the actual writing out of two stoichiometries, starting from the two starting materials, calculating out the amount of product, which one is smaller. The smaller one is the amount you can actually make. And the thing that produced that smallest amount is called the limiting reagent. That's the whole lesson. I think we're ready for a break.
I have a quick question.
Oh, I was so close to getting my break.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Go for it.
I'll make it quick. If you're doing a problem like this with multiple roadmaps and you know what the formula, the roadmap looks like, you know, for instance, for both of these, you know, everything's pretty identical other than your molar mass. Is it acceptable in the chemistry world to, if you've done, you know, the one for the acid, the first acid, for you to know, okay, well, the denominator in that is higher, thus it's going to give me a lower number. Is it acceptable to know that information and just do the roadmap for the one you know you need?
Yes and no. There are two ways to solve a limiting reagent problem. If you look at this problem and you see what's going on in the roadmaps, the roadmap is identical over here. They both have the same termination point, which means that I don't actually have to do that part of the roadmap to solve the problem. All I have to do is figure out how many moles of one and how many moles of the other I have.
Yeah.
And I've already solved the problem. And you're doing that based on which denominator is smaller. True, the denominator is going to be smaller for one than it is for the other. For instance, we're looking at 138 versus 102. So this denominator is smaller, but it's not that this denominator was larger that made it limiting. It was the fact that this number over here in combination with the larger denominator made it limiting. So you have to be careful. You should still always run the two numbers and see what you're getting. And then these molar coefficients aren't always one-to-one either. So it's a good idea to run through those molar coefficients in order to make sure that you're getting to the moles, and then you can compare the moles of product. And whichever smaller number of moles of product you get the right answer. So your intuition is correct, but you could run into trouble based on what these beginning numbers are.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Okay, so that's cool. So shortcuts are great. Shortcuts are encouraged. Knowing when to shortcut and when not to shortcut is critical if you're going to do that. That's the only part that I would say about that. So great question. I love that. And I always love looking at the problem critically. What is it that I need to do? Because yes, I'm showing you like the whole picture. How do we, just like I keep showing you how to simplify the molar masses now, and I'm showing you shortcuts of how to do some of these things. Knowing when to use shortcuts and when not to use them is the really, really important part. All right, let's go take a little break. Let's go take a 10-minute break. We'll come back and that'll give me enough time to introduce percent yields and some new concepts here. All right, 10-minute break. Come back at 11:50.
Here and gone. at the time. I've been watching you since the moment you arrived. A white suit from London and shoes from Paris. Don't you wanna spend about an hour with me? The scent and the aroma refuses to breathe. It's more like a haze that's trying to succeed. It's drawing me in and pulling me to you. And every thought I have turns the language blue. Class. Handsome as the heavens that are filled with never caps. But underneath the mask I see the skin of a man. Smooth and seductive, who's really got a plan. It's drawing me in magnetically to you. You haven't got forever, but I got that too. All it costs is just a minute now.
Thank you.
Okay. Coming back online. Let's see if I can get the iPad back up here pretty quickly. All right, so looking at what we wanted to achieve, we had molar mass calculations, limiting reagents, both of which we have now done, and we need to do percent yields yet. And percent yield is actually not all that hard. Percent yield is a much simpler concept to discuss. And whenever we do a chemical reaction, the chemical reactions almost never go 100%. The chemical reactions usually go something less than 100%. So this would be percent yield. And we use the percent yield of a chemical reaction for a number of different purposes, a number of different things. Let's define it first. Percent yield equals the actual yield. This is from experiment, divided by the theoretical yield. Times 100%, or times 100 to give percent. So that's what percent yield is. The actual yield. Actual yield is what you actually get through experimentation. This equals the mass obtained in an experiment. The theoretical equals the calculated mass from stoichiometry . The calculated mass from stoichiometry is what we could make if it went 100%. So this percent yield then, actually, when we think about percent yield, this is the part divided by the whole times 100. And that's normally what we think of in terms of percent anyway. Percent is always part divided by whole times 100. So if we think about it that way, actual yield, which is always smaller than the theoretical, is the part. We divide it by the whole and we multiply by 100. And so that's percent yield. And so how do we use percent yield, and what can we do with percent yield? We could do a number of different things with it. Let's say that sodium and chlorine gas are reacted to produce sodium chloride as a salt. And so we're taking this gas and this solid, and we're reacting them to make sodium chloride as a salt. And the question reads that 2.67 grams of sodium metal are reacted with excess chlorine gas. And I need and 6.2 grams of sodium chloride were produced. If 6.23 grams of sodium chloride is actually produced, what is the percent yield of the reaction? So there's our problem. And this problem really isn't all that different from any other problem that we've done. We can still develop a roadmap and figure out what it is that we need to do, and we can parse the problem. So what am I given in the problem? I'm actually given two different things. I'm given the grams of sodium, and I'm given the grams of sodium chloride. So those are the two different things that I'm given. And I'm asked for the percent yield. Okay, so in a roadmap sense, it comes down to what what the definition of percent yield is in the way that we're going to look at this. We have 2.67 grams of sodium, and we make 6.23 grams of NaCl. This is my actual. I need to divide that by theoretical. So percent yield equals actual divided by theoretical times 100. So this is going to equal 6.23 grams of NaCl. And in the denominator, I'm going to go from 2.67 grams of sodium, but I will have to go to the moles of sodium and then to the moles of NaCl. And then I need a little bit more room to be able to go to the grams of NaCl, which is the theoretical. And then I'll need to multiply that whole thing by 100. So we can get this number, we could put it all into one calculation, but we tend not to. We tend to do it in two different calculations. We'll get the grams of NaCl that are the theoretical, and then we'll take the actual divided by the theoretical and divide it by 100. But I wanted you to see in a roadmap sense, this is kind of what we're doing. We're taking those grams of sodium and converting them into grams of sodium chloride, and that is the theoretical component of the problem of what I'm trying to do. So we'll go through and we'll do that calculation first. We'll go through and we'll do grams of sodium to moles of sodium to moles of sodium chloride and then to grams of sodium chloride. And it was 2.67 grams of sodium. To convert it into moles, what do I need to convert it into moles?
Molar mass.
Molar mass. Where do I get that molar mass? It's on your right. It's on your right, Kerrigan.
The periodic table?
Oh, it's on your left. Oh, you're on the floor.
I'm on the floor right
now. You're not on the desk anymore.
Yeah, I'm down here.
It's on the periodic table. 22.99 grams of sodium for every one mole. And then we need the balanced equation. Notice that it is 2 moles of sodium for every 2 moles of sodium chloride. So for every 2 moles of sodium, it's 2 moles of sodium chloride. And then for every 1 mole of sodium chloride, I need to know how many grams it is. I need grams of sodium chloride. Again, I'd have to go to the periodic table. Sodium is 22.99 and chlorine is 35.45. They come out to 58 something, 58.44. So I would have had to do that calculation, and I haven't shown you that calculation. I mean, you know how to do it. I just didn't write it down. I just did it in the calculator really quick. And so canceling units, grams of sodium cancel, moles of sodium cancel, moles of sodium chloride cancel, and I'm in grams of sodium chloride. So it is 2.67 divided by 22.99 times 2 divided by 2. I'll skip that part. I'll do it here. Come on, calculator. Clear. 2.67 divided by 22.99. I'll skip over the twos because it's dividing by two and multiplying by two. And then I will multiply by 58.44. That gives me a mass that is 6.78707264. That's grams of NaCl. I'll round that out to the right number of sig figs. So I started with 3. That's not my sig fig color. There we go. 3, 4, exact, 4, supposed to be 3. So that's 6.79 grams of NaCl. This is theoretical. Now what I'll do is I'll take that theoretical amount and plug it into my percent yield calculation. So the percent yield now equals my actual 6.23 of NaCl divided by my theoretical of 6.79 grams of NaCl multiplied by 100. So 6.23 divided by 6.79 times 100 gives me a 91.75, oops, hey, come on, residue. Where is it? Bring it back, there we go. 91.7525. And then this has sig figs along with it too. So we have to go through and look and see, yes, I had 3 sig figs. I'll have 3 sig figs here. So the actual answer is the percent yield equals 91.8%. How did that go?
Good.
Okay, so that all looks okay. Everybody understands how to do percent yield.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, we haven't practiced it, but yeah, but it looks okay. I mean, it doesn't look confusing. Okay, we can also use percent yields. Ooh, but why not 100%? That's an interesting question, Eric. Why don't they run 100%? There are several reasons why they don't run 100%. How do I explain this? Some of the reasons that they don't run 100% is that sometimes there are side products that can be formed. Sometimes the two reactants don't make only one thing. Sometimes there's other things they can make. So for instance, if I'm doing a chemical reaction and that chemical reaction A plus B can go to make C plus D plus E, but really I'm only concerned or looking at this thing and I want to know what my percent yield is, D and E being what we call side products or byproducts. Subtract from the possible yield. So they decrease down the available amount of C that I can make. And these are not always included in a balanced chemical equation. So that when we do a balanced chemical equation, we look at A plus B going to C. Sometimes we don't talk about D and E and other things that could be made. So there's one reason. Another reason is that Another reason is that chemical reactions are not always A plus B goes to make C. They are A plus B goes to make C and C goes to make A plus B, and there is what is called an equilibrium. Every chemical reaction has an equilibrium, and it is the state of the equilibrium which often determines how far a chemical reaction will run. So this is called equilibrium. And in chemical equilibrium, the equilibrium state of the equation tells me how much product I can make, and the equilibrium itself can limit how much product I can actually make. That is a study that we'll actually look at next week as well, is that we will look at equilibrium equations and the equilibrium constants of chemical reactions, which have to be measured. And every chemical reaction has its own equilibrium constant, how far a chemical reaction will proceed before it starts to run backwards, in essence. And that's kind of a cool idea too. Some chemical reactions only run a little bit. Some chemical reactions run to completion, and each one has its own sort of equilibrium, and that's a great topic. Other things are sometimes we lose product to the glassware and to other physical losses. Our ability to be able to actually handle and capture everything that a chemical reaction makes. Sometimes we lose things in the process, like when we're filtering, or when we're isolating, or when we're extracting, or when we're scraping it off the glassware. All of those have little tiny losses in them, and they diminish the physical amount that I can hold in my hand that I call the actual yield. And so they can detract from the theoretical yield and make the yield smaller. So there are many different things. There's side products, equilibrium, physical loss. All of those make getting 100% yield very, very challenging. And that's why we have percent yields or deal with percent yields. So there's one more problem type that I haven't shown you, and that is we can use percent yield in a different way. Let's go back to that sodium chloride problem so that we don't have to create a whole new problem. And let's look at this. Let's say that we have the same reaction, Na plus Cl2 goes to make NaCl. And let's say that we react 0.62 grams of chloride, and what we and the reaction runs, and we have excess of sodium. Reaction runs to produce a 79.2% isolated yield. how much sodium chloride was produced. So in this case, I'm giving you the percent yield, and I'm asking you how much product can be made. And this is a very similar problem. What we're going to do is, stoichiometry-wise, we're going to do the theoretical. The theoretical yield is going to be the grams of Cl2 converted into the moles of Cl2 and the moles of NaCl, and finally out to the grams of NaCl. So there's my roadmap. And that is the theoretical yield. Remember that the percent yield, which is equal to 79.2%, is the actual divided by the theoretical. So the theoretical yield we just solved for. So this is the theoretical yield. I have the percent. What I don't have is the actual. So my unknown is the actual yield. So how do I get the actual yield? Well, what I do is I take the actual and I treat it like a mathematical equation. Is going to equal the percent yield times the theoretical. So I'll get the theoretical yield. I'll go through the stoichiometry. I'll get that yield. Once I get it, I'll multiply it by 79.2%. And it will give me the actual yield. Right? So 79.2% equals actual over theoretical. Actually, what we can do is if we just take that piece out of the equation, then this piece makes a little more sense. 79.2%, and we have solved for the actual yield. Does that make it look a little better? Cool. Okay, let's do this one real quick and let's see what it comes down to. All right, so we'll get that theoretical yield first. We're starting with 0.62 grams. 0.62 grams of chlorine. And chlorine is 35.45, and there's two of them. 35.45 times two, 70.90.
That's 0.62. Where did it come from?
The problem. I was stating it.
Okay.
So 0.62 grams of chlorine, for every 70.92 grams of chlorine, I get one mole. For every one mole of chlorine, I get two moles of sodium chloride. And this molar mass we calculated before, so every one mole of sodium chloride, I get 58.44 grams of sodium chloride. That's going to give me my, I'm just checking that 58.44. I think that was the right number. It is. That's going to give me my theoretical yield. So let's get that 0.62 divided by 70.90 times 2 times 58.44.
Where did the 70.90 come from?
Chlorine is two times, so it's, there's two chlorines. So Cl2 is two times 35.45 grams per mole off the periodic table. And that's my 58.44 in grams per mole. So it's just off the periodic table. I was calculating the molar. What's that?
We did a 2-to-1 molar ratio because it's because of the two Na stated at the beginning.
Yeah, I might have been going too fast. Let me slow down.
Thank you.
That's my fault. I apologize.
Okay.
Okay. This was our balanced chemical equation. And so where I'm pulling things from, this was my stated mass. It was my given in the problem. So as my given in the problem, that's what I'm starting with, is that mass. The molar ratios that are in the problem are 1 to, should have been 2, and so those are the coefficients that I pulled down to do the molar coefficients. This piece is the molar mass. And that piece came from looking at the mass of chlorine and knowing that chlorine equals 35.45 grams per mole for one chlorine. So Cl2 equals 2 times 35.45, which is what equals the 58.44. And so that's where that piece came from. So now we have our starting mass. Oops, nope, I'm making a mistake. I was on autopilot. Chlorine is 35.45, but Cl2, this is 2 times 35.45, this is the 70.90 grams per mole. The sodium chloride molar mass came from, that was the other question that I had, came from chlorine. There is 1 times 35.45. And sodium, there is 1 times 22.99. And adding those two together is what equals the 58.44 grams per mole. And now we are squared and back on track.
Those are your molar masses.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Exactly. So now we see where everything's coming from in this problem.
I have a quick question.
Yes, Vanessa.
How come it's not the sodium? I mean, it's not the chloride that's the excess. How come the sodium is the excess?
Oh, because I got to make the problem any way I wanted to, and so that's the way I made it.
But when we have two, when they, oh.
So Vanessa, there's two different problem types. There's the problem type where I give you a mass of sodium and a mass of chlorine. Mm-hmm. And when I do that, that's a limiting reagent problem. And then we run two stoichiometries. In this case, I didn't want it to be a limiting reagent. So what I said is when I don't want to deal with a limiting reagent problem, I use the word excess. That means that you know which thing is limiting and you only have to deal with the thing that I gave you. You can completely ignore the thing that I tell you is an excess.
Okay. But,
It's like this, Vanessa, if I tell you that you have 10 bicycle frames and all the tires you could possibly want, how many bikes can you make?
Ten,
exactly. Because you've got 10 frames and all the tires you could want. So if you have 0.62 grams of chlorine and all the sodium that you could possibly want in order to react with it, then all you have to do is worry about how much you can make from the chlorine.
Okay, got it. I was just confused because we're getting 2 Na out of it, which is the only thing we have, and then we have 2 chlorine atoms, so I was just confused.
Oh, okay. I do see where you're going with that. Yes, notice that this is Cl2 subscripted 2 because right. Chlorine is diatomic and it comes as 2.
Right.
But if I look at how many chlorines are here and how many chlorines are on this side, there are 2 chlorines on this side as well. Which yeah. is why it is 1 of these to 2 of these.
Got it. Okay. Makes sense.
Good. Okay.
Thank you.
Let me finish this problem out. Unless I already did this. Oh, I did do it already. 0.62 divided by 70.9 times 2 times 58.44. It looks like it's right. And this value was 1.022 0818. This is grams of NaCl. What is my dog doing? This is the theoretical yield to get the actual. We said that we're going to take that theoretical, and the actual yield will equal the percent yield times theoretical. And so I'm going to say that this is equal to 79.2. Remember the way that we use percents. 79.2 grams of NaCl for every 100 grams of NaCl. That's what we mean by actual over theoretical. And then I will multiply that by my 1.0. We should get the right sig figs on this. It was 2 sig figs. That's a nice round number for 2 sig figs. Grams of NaCl. And so that's going to equal 0.79 grams of NaCl can be made. I did not intend for that to come out that way. The fact that I came out with 1.0 can be confusing, and the fact that this number is the same as that number, but the process is exactly as I have shown it. You take the actual that you want to get is the percent yield times the theoretical. We usually just multiply it in the decimal form, but I wanted to show how to use it as a conversion factor. For every 100 grams of sodium chloride that is theoretical, I can actually make 79.2. And so if my theoretical is 1, then the actual amount that I can make is 0.79 to the 2 sig figs. Does that help when I put the words in it, I think? When I put theo over, actual over theo?
All of the extra words are super helpful.
What's that?
All of the extra words are super helpful.
Okay, good. Then yeah. I'll keep trying to do that.
Yeah, it's cool.
And so percent yields can be not only just calculating a percent yield, but sometimes we can use the percent yield to figure out how much product we make. So percent yields can be done in that way too. All right. Where does that leave us? We're 5 minutes over time. That leaves us 5 minutes over time. And what I want to show you, just real quick, is that last night and this morning, I've got the answer key for Chapter 6 homework, and I've got a Chapter 6 homework set for you guys to do, and I'll get that posted this afternoon. And so the answer key is almost done, and it goes through a little bit of warm-up in calculating molar masses, some percent compositions, so we were dealing with percents. It goes through determining the percent in of water and copper sulfate, kind of like what we did in lecture at one point. It goes through the empirical formulas and how to calculate empirical formulas with the process and outlining it all. It has slightly larger problems, so extending it out to three elements in a problem and how do you calculate that. There's some repetition in there. Determining the molarity of solutions and how we go through and use molarity is, and that's kind of where I left off, and I got to catch up with the rest of it. But anyway, there's going to be adequate practice problems for you to do there, and the answer key will be up, and I'll get that all online this afternoon. In the meantime, it's time to go get some lunch.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I have questions.
Okay, you got questions. I will hang on the line and do any questions that anybody wants to do. And other than that, you guys can all skedoodle. And I'll see the afternoon group in lab.
Okay. So I have the code for the afternoon lab, so I don't need to ask you that again.
Okay.
Can you send me the notes from the first half of lecture?
Yes, from cool. Today.
Yes.
First half. Okay, I'll just send you the whole thing.
Oh, cool. Okay. And then I'm trying to like look at everything and figure out like what I should do and like what's most important to be working on right now. And I know everything is important to work on. I get that, but
everything.
Right. So we need the solubility stuff. All of that needs to happen. And then the chapter 6 homework. Is that right?
Yes. What we did in lab today is we finished the solubility stuff, or at least worked on it significantly more. I got the Canvas things up online and was able to get those actually to work last night so okay. that we can do the chemical unknown. And that's what we were doing today. And I was just staying online in lab to help everybody and assist everybody through that process.
Oh.
And then you have the chapter 6 homework, which I'm going to get up online, which is going to give you practice to do. Yes.
Okay. In that case, would you recommend that I just go work on my solubility stuff? And if I have questions, just ask you in office hours.
You can jump into the afternoon lab and jump in and out and use it like office hours. So you don't have to wait until office hours.
Cool.
So that's okay. What I told everybody in the morning, that everybody was invited to jump into the afternoon lab if they needed more support, if they felt like they didn't get enough time in the morning lab.
Okay, cool. That's awesome. Thank you. That's
You're
it.
Welcome. Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
I have a question too.
Okay, Vanessa.
It's unrelated to what we did today, but kind of related.
All right.
So at the very beginning, the very first exercise.
From this morning?
From this morning.
Oh, wait, from the lecture. From this
from the lecture. Yeah, from the lecture.
I'm there.
Yes, right there. Up, if you go up a little more. So how is, am I supposed to know how the equation breaks up? Like, why is it not combining into just one molecule? Why is it CO2 and H2O? Am I supposed to know this?
Yes and no. The answer to that question is that we have looked at certain types of problems, certain types of chemical equations. And at this point, you should be able to do three different types of chemical reactions. I could give you the reactants for three different types of chemical reactions, and you should be able to write the products for them. Those three types double displacement, this is A, B plus C, D. Goes to form A, D plus C, B. These are switching partners. A goes with D, C goes with B. They are cation to anion and cation to anion. So you should be able to do the double displacement reactions. And if I give you the materials to start with, for instance, if I give you sodium hydroxide and ferric chloride, you should be able to write the reaction that it goes
sodium
to.
Sodium chloride and
yes.
Iron hydroxide, yeah.
Yes, you were saying it correctly. And then you should be able to balance it. Then I should need three of these and three of those,
right.
And you should
pretty
be good.
Pretty much what we were doing, right?
And yes.
Yeah.
Acid base. acid base you should be able to do because it follows the double displacement pattern. It looks like this. It is HA plus B goes to form well, I'm going to do it this way. You should be able to do all acid base. I was trying to do it more generally, but I think I'm going to do it this way. Is HA plus BOH goes to make AB plus water. So this is acid-base neutralization, which follows the double displacement pattern. H goes with OH, B goes with A. So this is plus and minus, plus and minus. And so an example there would be HCl plus sodium hydroxide, which goes to make NaCl plus water, or H2SO4 plus two sodium hydroxides go to make sodium sulfate plus water. So the acid base is another type. So we got double displacement and the acid base neutralizations, which follow the double displacement pattern. So you should be able to do both of those. The third type is combustion. In a combustion problem, we take C, X, H, Y, O, Z, and we add to it oxygen gas, and we make CO2 and H2O. These are always the same. So in the equation that I gave you this morning, I gave you the combustion of C8H18. In order to write that out, I would automatically know that I just add oxygen and produce carbon dioxide and water. And then it's my job of going through and balancing that equation, just like I would balance any other.
Okay.
It's 8, 18, 2, 1, 2, and 3. And I start the process by just going through and balancing the carbon. That changes 8, 16, 17. Balance the hydrogen. So that gives me 18, changes my count to here 25. And then it's an odd number, so I come back and I hit 25 halves. That gives me 25. And then I go through and I multiply the whole thing by 2 in order to clear the fraction. And that's where I arrive at the C8H18 plus 2502 goes to form 16 CO2 plus 18 H2O.
Okay.
So those are the three types of equations that you should be able to write if I give you the starting products.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Can you just leave it on the screen real quick so I can take a picture?
Yes, I can.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, guys, I'm going to go ahead end the session. I'm going to go get some lunch. And if I don't see you in the afternoon lab or office hours, then I will see you on Monday. And you guys have a great weekend.